All right, welcome back to the official Atari Games podcast. This is a fun one. I'm excited about this. I mean, I'm excited about all of them, but this one in particular should be a good one. I'm joined by Chris Kohler, editorial director at Digital Eclipse. Welcome, Chris. How you doing?
Hello, thank you.
Great, thanks for being here. Also joined by Ivan Zorzin, the GOAT
at Longsoft.
Hello, Ivan. How you doing today?
Yeah, not bad, not bad. Be working a lot for you.
You make it sound like it's involuntary. Come on, man.
It's all good. Right? But you know, when you ask me to fix something that has been quite a while ago, and you start watching old code, and you can't remember how this thing was working, it's like, oh my god.
He's been moaning about it so much.
Yeah, I've been moaning about it. But it's coming along good. It's coming along good.
I'm gonna immediately head forward to David Page. Also joined by Jeff Minter, the Ox. At LlamaSoft. Welcome, Jeff. How you doing?
Pretty good, thanks. Hello, everybody. Nice to be here.
Great to have you here. Before we jump into things, let's do a little bit of housekeeping here. As always, I ask and plea. I'm sitting down, but I would be on my knee saying, hey, please review us and subscribe to the podcast. That would be great. Join the Atari Discord. You could sign the link below in the description. And the reason why we're here with these fine gentlemen is because LlamaSoft, the Jeff Minter story, is available now at the time of this podcast releasing. Also available now, AkaR got a fresh update for PS5 with VR support, which, I mean, personally speaking, I think is the best way to play AkaR now. And lastly, we just this week announced the release date for Lunar Lander Beyond. So that'll be coming out April 23rd on basically all platforms, and you could go and wishlist that or pre-order that now. That would be much appreciated. So, with all that news out of the way, we got some guests. We're going to have some fun. We're going to talk about the Jeff Minter story with Jeff Minter himself.
It's very weird. That,
is it weird?
It's just, the Jeff Minter story, it sounds so strange to me. It's very odd.
Yeah. It's so nice you didn't... There, you didn't
but it's kind of
so,
like,
so you didn't choose that title. You didn't choose that title yourself.
No, it's just kind of, I don't know, it feels strange being the subject of this, but yeah, you know, it's really nice. It's lovely. Don't get me wrong. I'm not complaining. It's just odd.
Yeah, well, we'll get into that in a second. I want to start with a warm-up question. It's such a simple question. It's a question that you could ask to literally anybody. I think a child gets asked this question a lot, but it felt appropriate considering you guys deal with kaleidoscopic games. I think if it was a genre, that's what it would be. So the question is simple. What's your favorite color? Chris, I'll start with you. I'm going to go left to right from what I see on my screen.
I have to start the what's your favorite color question.
You have to start the what's your favorite color question. Yeah.
That's a very, it reminds me of the way that Buddy the Elf answers the telephone. And, right? It's like, Buddy the Elf, what's your favorite color? It's so important, isn't it, when you're a kid to like narrow down to that favorite color.
It defines your life.
You have to have one. Right. Probably, I don't know. I'm trying to think of like when I was a kid. I guess I must have gone back and forth between blue and green at some point. So we'll average it out and we'll call it like, you know, turquoise.
All right, I like that. Yeah. Hey, look, there's no right or wrong answers in what's your favorite color.
Oh, thank goodness. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Unless you say black or white, which are definitively not colors. Jeff, what about you?
It's fairly easy. My favorite color is purple. You'll see it in a lot of my games. A lot of my the glowing stuff I do, my particle systems, you see lots and lots of purple.
I don't know if people notice. I don't know how clearly it comes through the picture, but
you
the
should
earbuds
come very
that I tend
clear.
To wear.
Jeff puts purple everywhere.
Yeah, but I'm actually wearing purple headphones. They're my wired pair that I have, the Panasonic Ergo Fits, and I always just like to have a cheap but quality pair of wired headphones with me at all times. And these are the ones, and they're in purple. So I got them in purple. Ivan, what about you?
Well, that's a bit of a kind of an easy question because I was thinking when you asked when I was a child or something like that. I don't know exactly why, but until a certain time when I was in the primary, secondary, and tertiary school, I would have said that my favorite color was green. But as I'm getting older and probably have spending too much time in Wales where it's always raining, I really would say I started to get quite a passion for warm colors like orange, yellow, red. It was something that gives me the feeling of sun and warm and a sunny beach and the sea, something like that. So I'm oriented to colors that gives me the feeling of warm.
All right. Very nice. Yeah. And as for myself, you know, secondary colors reign supreme, right? So your green, purple, and orange. Orange being probably my favorite color. It could be a different one any day, but I just bought some new hockey skates that have some pretty cool orange accents, and that's pretty nice. So yeah, orange is the winner. Purple, close second. Green coming in shortly thereafter. I notice, Chris, you're drinking a green tea over there, a quality Itoen green tea. That's right. I could tell even by the quick swig you took. So got to respect green.
This is tea.
That is tea.
Unfortunately, are we going to get into this again?
Unfortunately, I don't know if I can show the detail or it could be a bit inappropriate for this. So, I don't know. Anyway, it's a thing I got on Amazon, so I can show it. This is my Mac.
Oh, my God. What's that?
It has to be goldy.
Oh, okay. Very nice. Very nice. Well, fellas, thank you. Thank you for indulging that silly warm-up question. And with that, we can jump into talking about the reason we're all here today. And that would be the Jeff Minter story. So you started off with a bit of an anecdote about how, you know, the title makes you feel weird. So I got to ask, where did the title come from? And how is it decided? Like, could have been called anything, but you didn't focus
gosh.
On, yeah. But you just, how do we capture it all?
I think we all just had so many, the titles of these things, you've asked such a loaded question because there's always this like, sort of just like pulling our own intestines out kind of feeling of like, what are we going to call this game? And like these constant discussions about it. And eventually we land on something. It's like, well, we wanted to have Jeff Minter, you know, in the title of the game. And we just, I don't know. We just felt like LlamaSoft was such a evocative phrase, right? It sums up things so well, this life's work of Jeff's, that we really enjoyed. We really liked LlamaSoft, so we landed on LlamaSoft. The Jeff Minter story is sort of a, you know, kind of a, you know, high concept in the sense that like you hear it and it's like, oh, okay, I get what this is going to be. And I think that was really what was important, is really messaging that. You know, of course, there's the documentary film which plays into this, which is also coming out this year, called Heart of Neon. But it's like, I think that works great for the film, but it doesn't communicate enough probably as like the title of a game that we have to sell to people.
Right. Yeah. What did you, so what was that conversation like when you first started this project? I'm assuming you approached how did you decide? So Gold Master series, you know, this is, you know, technically the second one, but you could almost call, I almost consider Atari 50 like Goldmaster Zero, right?
Right, right.
And then you have, yeah. So how did you decide? You know, obviously I've worked with Jeff now for a couple of years, and obviously he's worthy of a documentary style game, but how did you decide that this was the next one you want to do after Karateka?
So this is a good question, I think, for Jeff, because, you know, Jeff's relationship with our studio head, Mike Micah, goes back a long ways. And so I think they've been talking a long time about wanting to do something together, right?
Yeah, and it just seems, yeah, it was a nice opportunity, I thought, to, you know, to get some of the history down and get it recorded. Kind of thing which I would have liked to have done myself, but it's far too big of a task for me, and you guys do it so much better than we could ever do it. And it just turned into this really amazing thing, really.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really cool. I've been playing around with it. And if you're watching the video, you could see me play through it as well. What were some of the more surprising bits as you were going through this production and almost like reliving your life, so to speak, like in games?
Well, I found it quite emotionally challenging at times, actually, because I was going through a lot of archive material and it was taking me back to places that, yeah, you know, I could never go back to, and people that I'm never going to see again. And it was surprisingly difficult to get through some of that stuff. Well, I'm glad I did it, but it was quite a task to get through that stuff. But it was nice. It was a good opportunity to to sort through the archive, which I did. I've had an archive here for a while, and it's just been packed away in boxes. And it was nice to actually finally get it out and sort through it and see what we've got and see what we haven't got. We haven't got everything, unfortunately. But there was enough there to do the job, I think.
Very cool. Chris, can you point to like any particular interview or moment in the production that is worth like calling attention to and be like, this was pretty cool, this was weird, this was fun?
Oh gosh. I mean, it's absolutely packed with really fun stuff. And that's the joy of getting to do this, is all of that discovery. And then I think getting to take all of those materials and arrange them chronologically and find the links between them, you know, see how the games that we're including match up with the design documents and what sort of stories we can pull out of that. You know, and Jeff has been, I mean, Jeff really dove into this with gusto because, you know, he went through all of the old British video game magazines just month by month and pulled out all of the LlamaSoft advertisements. And those were important, I mean, A, to include them and show what the LlamaSoft ads look like, you know, how they, even the ads were this very close back and forth between Jeff and the LlamaSoft fans. It's like Jeff is writing these ads for the LlamaSoft fans who are going to find them in the magazine, so we can kind of like tell them like, hey guys, like this is what's going on, this is what we're doing, you know, send me another, you know, £5 and, you know, I'll send you the next cassette tape with the next game on it. And but what's great is because Jeff was so prolific and was producing like a dozen games a year, you know, to have all those ads is the only way we could figure out the chronology of like what game came before what game, because you have this massive list of games and the release date of all of them is 1983. And so it's like, well, how did that actually? So by looking at the ads month on month on month in these magazines, you can actually figure out what came first, what came second, and sort of build out that timeline that way.
I was just panning around trying to see if I could find some of these ads. I think I found that one before that was just on. Here's a Mama Llama ad. Is this one of the examples of that?
That's one of the examples of that. Yeah. We, you know, that Mama Llama artwork, we see it in a lot of different places. We should have Steiner Lund's original airbrush version of that. And then that's showing you how that all works, like, you know, in the ad with the, you know, with yep. the logo and with the information on it. Oh yeah. Even one of the original sketches for it too. But we see this coming up a lot. We see it on the cover of the box as well. So in case you're a big fan of this Mama Llama artwork, there's like so many different iterations of it that you can.
Sorry, go ahead, Jeff.
It's quite interesting to look at the ads and see the evolution of the artwork. When we started out, we just had a local print shop doing fairly primitive stuff for us. And then we discovered Steiner Lund, or he discovered us. We met at this computer exhibition. He said he came with his portfolio and said, oh, I've got some artwork. Do you want to have a look? Perhaps you'd like to commission something. And he opened up his portfolio and I was like, wow, this is amazing stuff. And it was kind of, yeah, that was kind of a threshold for us. We went from being fairly sort of scrappy looking, sort of homemade look, to a much more professional look with his artwork. And you could see that happening in the ads as well. And what I liked about it as well was that our advertising, it became less, it was always about communicating with the fans, but it got to a point where we didn't even have to say anything about the games, really. We could just post an advert that was a picture of a llama and mention some game names, and people would go out and buy the games. That was all we needed to say. That was fantastic.
By the way, Jeff, I never understood Mill at all. The shipping space that is used to be behind this wall, is that an original?
Yeah, that's the original. You have the original artwork for shipping space there. I have the original artwork for Ancipital here. We should put those in our arcade room, really.
Yeah, we will. We will.
It's cool. Well, Ivan, I got to ask, because you were probably, you know, obviously you're next to Jeff every step of the way here. Did you learn anything through this whole process? Anything that surprised you along the way as they were gathering information?
About
this man's life.
To be honest, I haven't followed that very closely because for once it was something very personal of Jeff and really very emotional, I would say. There was days where Jeff was really, let's say, not in a very good state because it was getting very nostalgic going through all this material and stuff, and I better leave him by his own. But yeah, I mean, the fact is there is really so much material. There is so many things in it. It is like, whoa, like, there is far too much. I mean, I never seen so much well-documented stuff, and especially the videos, the pictures, the stories. I remember when we found out at a certain point it was... And then another thing is, I'm glad that I managed to stop Jeff. There was a time where we had this room was completely full with boxes of everything. And Jeff was so tired of seeing this stuff in the room. He was always, one day I'm going to throw it all away. One day I'm going to throw it away. I was thinking, no, don't throw it away. Don't throw it away.
I was talking about the box. I was talking about the boxes, not the archive. I was never going to throw away the archive. It was just...
Yeah, but even in those boxes that you wanted to throw away, I found some treasure sitting in the middle, like that.
It was mostly crap. Come on, it was mostly crap.
You want to throw away things that some people could consider treasures.
I haven't finished throwing stuff away either.
Oh, God. See, I'm scared. It scares me. It really scares me.
Oh, man. You caught me at an interesting time to bring this up because I was just moving my desk today, and there's a lot of stuff that I just said, this could be thrown away. This is garbage. None of this stuff is actually something that could be deemed historical, where I could understand the perspective from you guys who have been, you know, doing this for decades now, where you never know. I mean, to have this stuff being preserved here is, it's huge. It's great. So. If I'm going to jump in and play a game, you know, to visualize here for people watching on YouTube, what should I jump into? So we got the whole library of games here. And keep in mind, if whatever I play, it'll probably be the first time I've played the game. Is there anything I should be jumping into first?
Well, I mean, probably.
Use this as a primer for a player jumping in. If a player's jumping in, they buy the collection or they buy the story and they say, all right, but I'll get to the story later. I want to jump in and play a game.
Well, if you're going to go just for something super accessible, which also is, you know, pretty much a threshold for Larbasoft really taking off, go for the VIC-20 version of Grid Runner, I would say. It's this simple. One? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's straightforward. Right, you understand what to do. It's not too complicated. Just press the fire button and off you go.
Then you die really fast. There we go. Perfect.
Just avoid the zap.
Yes. Oh my God!
Just avoid the.
Hang on, I'll get it. Yeah. All right, got it now. Okay, here we go. Simple. All right, here we go. I'm getting the hang of it. I didn't die in the first 3 seconds of the game.
You're doing all right now. Let's finish off those couple of segments.
Yeah, I just gotta wait these guys to come back around.
And Jeff, this is the original, right? I mean, this was the original version of Grid Runner, was the VIC-20
version. Yeah, the VIC-20 version. I think it's the best looking version of the 8-bit versions anyway, because on the Commodore 64, it came out a bit too thin and weedy. There's something nice about the chunkiness of the VIC-20's graphics sometimes.
Yeah. So what is the story behind Grid Runner? Can you give me a brief synopsis?
Basically, I mean, at that time, everybody was doing centipede clones, but Atari were getting a bit leery at that point. And so I fancied doing something along those lines myself. I didn't want to just copy centipede and have the wrath of Atari descend on me. So I thought I'll make it a bit more of a different theme, take away the garden theme, make it more spacey, and add these lasers at the side, add some elements of my own. It came out pretty well, you know. It came out nice, and it was sufficiently different to distinguish itself. I didn't get sued by Atari, which is always a bonus.
sounds great. This is really cool. Despite me being terrible at it, I think it's very cool.
The sequel is even better. The sequel is called Matrix, and there's a lot more things which go on in there. There are deflectors that appear on the screen and. All kinds
so
of
what's
stuff
the
like
okay? So I got the VIC-20 version and I got the Commodore 64.
Again, put the VIC-20 version on because it's chunky and lovely.
Love it, chunky and lovely. That's what I'm looking for. Here we go. Ooh, all right. So now this is you've discovered the kaleidoscope at this point because that starts off with that rainbow, that rainbow drop down. Okay, you've slowed down the pace a little bit. So I definitely feel a difference here, and I'm not immediately swarmed.
Yeah, it's a bit more accessible.
Yep.
I like the parallax in the background.
Yeah, it's cheap. The scrolling background. Cost
nothing. There we go. Look at that.
Yeah, we see. This has got a bit more flash to it now.
At what point did you discover and decide to start leaning in heavily to the, I mean, I keep using the word kaleidoscopic, but like the, you know, the rainbow of colors, like kind of just that, like, I think modern Jeff, right? Modern LlamaSoft games are known for their, you know, the, just like the in your face nature of a constant barrage of color. And it's amazing. Yeah,
I don't know. Maybe it's the fact that when I learned on a Commodore PET that was, and then the Sinclair ZX80 and ZX81, both of which were staunchly monochrome. And so as soon as I got my hands on something that could do color, it's like, come on, yeah, let's have all the bloody colors.
That's awesome.
And the same thing with the sound effects. It's like, yeah, let's make some noise.
Yeah. Yeah. And you just kind of lean into that more and more. All right, I got zapped. Finally, it got back to me. And actually, just I think it's worth kind of completing the circle on Grid Runner, because one of the cool things here that Digital Eclipse did is create that Grid Runner's remasters, right? So I want to, you know, Chris.
Oh, yeah, this is really nice. I like this. Yeah.
Oh, good. Glad you like it.
Yeah.
So, thank God. Oh, my God.
Yeah. So, again, our studio head, Mike Micah, huge Grid Runner fan. And what we've been doing we did this with Atari 50 with Yar's Revenge. And we have essentially what our internal like technology, the Eclipse engine, is kind of built to do. One of the things that it's built to do is to be able to take previously existing work, such as the Commodore 64 version of Grid Runner, and using that as the base, you know, overlay stuff on top of it, see what's going on, and then, you know, create a new audio visual look to it while not disturbing what's going on underneath. I think if you press
right bumper,
I don't know.
I was just waiting for the moment to do the thing.
You press right bumper, and it shows you that in fact this is Jeff's Commodore 64 version.
Then I have a question for you.
All of this.
Is it really running the original code then?
It is. It is running the original code.
All right. That's interesting.
It's really running the original code. And then essentially what we are getting to the outer limits of what I, as a non-technical person, can explain. But essentially, you know, Mike's program is he's sort of looking at the original code and then like swapping stuff in on the fly. So when you're playing this new audiovisual version, you're just playing the original Commodore 64 version, but it has stuff that's added in. So for example, the ships on the side and the bottom, or the ship in the bottom that occasionally zaps you, in the new graphics, you know, sort of mode, you can see it warming up its shot like that. The shot will sort of start glowing blue a little bit before it fires the shot. So it gives you as the player a little bit more of a heads up that like that's coming and you should probably get out of the way. So what this does is it gives people, like, not only does it look cool, it gives people a just slightly more accessible entrance point into enjoying Grid Runner. And so like maybe this is the way we can get more of that audience like playing and enjoying Grid Runner, and then they can kind of go back to the other versions as well.
Of course,
so whatever we can do to kind of give people an entry point is what we
do. Of course, I just want to point out, in case people doesn't know, we have made a VR version of Grid Runner, so it does exist.
Oh yeah, we've been doing various versions of Grid Runner all down the years, basically.
Yes. And yeah, that's something you can. The included games that are in this compilation, the playable games, it goes up to Tempest 2000. But then there's also a gameography that lists basically essentially everything that LlamaSoft has ever done, including things that we couldn't include in this compilation. And then it kind of goes beyond Tempest, and so then you can see at least like a screenshot of every time, you know, Grid Runner has been remade, whether it's for iOS or, you know, the Pocket PC ones or all that kind of stuff.
Sorry, I had to jump into
Hover Bobber.
Yeah,
because
the art is so wild. All right, this is probably going to be really silly. Feel free to judge me on my performance here. Yep, this is just a man walking into a house. This is the narration for the audio listeners. So now he is mowing the lawn. He is walking out.
He's got
of
his
frame.
Fly-mo.
All right, here we go. Now
he's got the fly-mo.
Okay, no, you've really got the gardener angle.
Oh, here we go. I see what's going on.
The gardener's going to take you.
Oh, no.
You've got to use your dog.
Trying to figure out.
Got
to
get out of the way.
Use your dog. Press your dog button.
Use my dog?
Your button is your dog button.
Oh, okay. You're right.
It makes the dog bark, and the neighbor and the gardener will run away from the dog. But the dog's only got a certain amount of patience. Eventually, the dog will run out of patience, and it will start chasing you as well.
All right. So what's the dog button then?
Your fire button is your dog button.
Hang on. Yeah, well, but the goal is to. There we go. Got it. I think I did it now. But the goal right now is to hide behind the hedges.
Oh boy. You want to save your dog. It's a precious resource.
Right. You shouldn't call dogs resources. That's...
You've mowed over the flower now. You've got the gardener angry.
Right. That was not my intention. So if you're listening, what's happening in this game is I'm like a top-down view of a...
You've hit the dog.
No. Let's be clear. I didn't hit the dog. The dog hit me.
Oh, the dog ran under your mower? Sure.
Yes, that's exactly what happens here.
I made a version of this for the pocket PC at one point, and if you hit the dog on that version, the vet comes out and chases you.
All right. While I was going through this, I got to ask about Ratman, or as I was calling him when I was playing yesterday, Ratman. Mr. Ratman.
Ratman, yeah.
So what can you tell me about Ratman? What is this man's story?
Basically, this is derived from a very obscure arcade game that I completely forgotten I'd ever even bloody seen. It was only when I saw it come up in May, but I thought, I know exactly where I would have seen it. There was a pub near the Atomic Weapons Research Place in Aldermaston, which I used to go to with my friend. And there was a tabletop game in there. And every couple of weeks, it would change the game. They'd change the games over. There was a very obscure game where it had these same rats descending from the sky. And I can't remember whether you hit them with a hammer or something like that. I can't remember how you attack them. But that's where that came from, basically. It's effectively a mixture of two arcade games that I played down that pub. One where you're hitting rats with a hammer. And the little rat at the bottom with a pokey stick is from another arcade game. It's a space game. You used to drop spacemen down, and they'd stand underneath where your ship was and poke up with little spears.
I was getting remnants of what was it, Yoshi, the puzzle game on Game Boy. That's what I was thinking of
Seen a Game Boy at this point. This is 1982.
Fair enough. Oh no!
Oh, here comes the hand of God.
The hand of God. Yeah. Very Monty Python.
Was it inspired by the food in Manic Miner?
Was it inspired by Monty Python
flying circus?
Yeah.
If you can get to a Headbanger's Heaven somewhere.
Headbanger's Heaven is nice.
I love it. This is the one that when people are like, tell me about a game. I always tell them about this one because it's so funny because he's a heavy metal fan, but really he's more of a fan of getting hit on the head with heavy metal hammers, and he's a pain addict. And so you got hit square on the head with a hammer, but that's actually good for this guy. Right. He likes it. And his pain meter goes up, and that increases your score multiplier. See, now you took a hammer to the arm, and that's bad. You want to get hit square. So that's the risk reward. If you get hit square on the head, it's good. However, if you get hit on the head with too many hammers, he dies because you can love pain, but only so much. And so then you have to get the money bag and get back, basically. And then the red hammers actually lower your pain meter. So
So I got the money.
There was a game that was going around, I think, on the Commodore PET with the original version called Money Bags. It was very similar to this, but it was quite boring because all you had to do was avoid everything and collect the money bags. And there was none of this risk reward of building up your pain meter. So I took that idea and then extended it with the idea of actually wanting to get hit by the hammers up to a point.
Oh, no.
And that's so many of the games so many of your games, which are, well, there was this game and I was playing it and I thought, this would be a lot better if.
It needs more stuff. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. That is the nature of game development nowadays, right? Like usually it's rare that a game is indescribable, right? typically you could say, oh, it's like this or it's like that. I mean, even in the publishing game, if someone's going to, oh my God, this is impossible. This is literally impossible what I'm going through right now. But if, you know, if someone's describing a game or pitching a game, typically you would have to say, yeah, the game is like this, but this is the difference. Like, you don't want it to be a clone,
cool,
but you want it to have some sort of familiar ground. Come on. Is that impressive what I just did, by the way?
You're doing really good.
Yeah, that was good.
Especially considering you're carrying the conversation and playing.
And you know, you do know that if you use the red hammers, you can reset the pain meter, so you don't have to...
Right, I know, yeah, but yeah. It was kind of impossible to get to the red hammers through... Oh, here's the game over. Wait, there's purple hammers. At some point. I don't know, maybe.
There's red hammers. There's cyan hammers.
You know what?
If you go to the instruction manual, so, you know, some of these games didn't actually have instruction manuals, but if you're inside Headbangers Heaven and you go to the instruction manual, you can see a lot of these games, the instructions were actually, you know, integrated into the program itself. And so you can watch this intro in the game, but then we grab screenshots of it, so you can always reference back to it. Oh, and perfect. So this tells you how it all works. And it's, of course, it's all very funny. And it's like, there's just all these, moments in all of these games where, you know, Jeff is writing to you, you know what I mean? Like his personality is coming through the humor writing and stuff like that. And where's his influence on his sleeve? I mean, with the Centipede for the ZX81, it's like, there's a line that's just like, Centipede is the hottest new game idea since Space Invaders. So that was a wonderful way to begin, essentially begin a game, introduce somebody to a game.
Yeah.
There's so much in here.
I had never actually played the arcade Centipede at the time when I made that game. That's why it has like a laser base at the bottom, like in Space Invaders. I didn't know you could go up and down at that point.
That's awesome.
I've been telling that story a lot too, and that's what's so important is that we put that content. That context is in the game. I mean, it we have a little entry that talks about that, like, and that's what's. I think I would hope that would make these games. More interesting to players, because if you just saw that ZX81 version of Centipede didn't have that context, it's not nearly as interesting as knowing that you made it without ever having played Centipede. That for multiple reasons. One, because you can see the differences and like, oh right, looking at a screenshot of Centipede in a magazine, you would not know that the ship can move up and down. And the other thing is just this, you know, again reiterating, like, these games just came from that passion of seeing a game and saying, oh man, I wish you could play this game. There's no Centipede machine around here. I'll go home and make it.
Yeah. I needed to jump in and play Tempest 2000 so that people who are watching this on video know that I am capable of playing some video games. and I am like a big Tempest fan. So it's pretty cool that the first project I got to work on with Jeff and Ivan was actually Tempest 4000, the switch to the switch port that we did. And then I was there from basically start to finish through AKR. So, you know, this is very near and dear to my heart, is like playing Tempest. So I'm a big fan of that. And what you guys have,
I've got some nice new things on the new thing as well, which you want to see.
What's that? Oh, no. Can't talk about that quite yet, but soon, and I'm excited when people see that. But there's a little bit of a teaser for you guys. Look at us kind of teasing breaking news there. That was a careful one there.
No, very careful.
Yeah. But this is good stuff. And I guess this was, Chris, I guess part of the groundwork to getting Tempest running here was also using similar emulators to what was being done with the... Because Jaguar emulators are kind of tough, right? And you guys did a really great job of getting that working in Atari 50.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, went to one of the great, you know, emulator writers of our time, Rich Whitehouse, and challenged him to essentially get that going. Because even if you wanted to play Jaguar games in an emulator prior to Atari 50, you simply could not do it because there were emulators, but they were nowhere near what they needed to be. So he took that as this, you know, this great challenge of, can I do this? And so... Yeah, I mean, that was the, you know, starting off the LlamaSoft project, you know, when we first started kind of building it, it's like, well, you know, Tempest 2000 was already, you know, perfectly taken care of in the emulator in the game. So that was not something that we had to worry about.
Got it. Very cool.
Everything else, it took a while for, I actually think the final things that got implemented were the Sinclair ZX81 stuff, because that was, you know, that was not something that people were expecting that we would want to be, you know, emulating or featuring. So there was significant emulation work that had to get done on that to get that going.
Yeah. Well, I need to get out of this game. Otherwise I'm just going to keep playing it forever. I did bring up Ratman. Now I need to talk about this man, Goatman.
Hey,
tell me about this guy. I know this is kind of more closer to the brand image itself, because there's always a goat. Can we talk about the goat? We got to understand the Goatman, and that's constantly appearing throughout your games, and that running theme, even up to Aka R, where you are controlling a goat head.
This particular goat, the Ancipital, there was a character in a science fiction story by Brian Aldiss, which had it was called a Heliconia Spring, or they had a trilogy, Heliconia Trilogy. It's about the conflict between a race of humans on a planet, and they're in conflict with a race of basically half ox goat type creatures called the Ancipitals. Now, in this conflict, you know which side I was on, of course. It was the side of the Ancipitals, because they were the original inhabitants of the planet anyway. The humans were annoying upstarts. But
naturally, of course, makes perfect sense.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, obviously, I couldn't afford to license the official character from this story. And anyway, I don't know how I would have turned that into an arcade game, because the story was more about politics and the battles between these. You know, it wasn't really about the act of fighting. It was about all the politics and intrigue. And there's a whole bunch of interwoven stories, which you couldn't really have told very effectively on an 8-bit micro in the form of an arcade game, I don't think. However, Ancipital is just it's a word. It describes a kind of blade. So I thought, I'll help myself to that word, and I'll make the character more goaty and stick him in a game. And there he was. He actually started out as, quite a lot of my characters do, started out as an enemy in one of the games. He was an enemy in Sheep in Space. But because I liked him so much, I thought, ah, he's got to become the hero of the next game. So after Sheep in Space, I did Ancipital and gave him his, he became the number one star of the game.
Nice. I mean, it worked for Donkey Kong, right?
Donkey Kong
was originally a villain. And then, so it makes perfect sense. I mean, everybody likes a relatable... Everybody likes a relatable villain, right?
Yeah, I wonder, I'd like to do another Ancipital game. People say that's one of the games that I've never actually done an official sequel to. Perhaps I ought to one of these days.
That'd be great. Like this is a very interesting game, because I can't tell if I'm doing good or poorly. I haven't died, I don't think, but also if I guess you can't touch the walls.
You can. Where you want to jump up.
Okay. Oh, yeah. There we go. Oh, wait, then I died. No?
No, you haven't died. You've gone through the wall into the previous room. Now jump down.
Oh, okay.
Jump down. The yellow bit is where the wall is open, yeah? If you jump down onto the one below, jump up onto the ceiling there, that's right, and then jump down.
You got go through it. Okay.
There you go.
Okay, now I'm fighting these pigs.
That is Rory the Savage Guinea Pig. If you shoot Rory the Savage Guinea Pig, you will die.
Oh, so don't shoot him.
Explain the story of Rory, because it's quite a story.
Basically, I got a letter from this girl saying she liked the way I put animals into my game, and would I be interested in putting her guinea pig called Rory into the game? And I thought, well, I could do that, but I mean, I've got to have it. Do something a bit more interesting than just sort of squeaking and eating bits of hay. So I made him into Rory the Savage Guinea Pig. And if you see him, he's always quite pacifistic. But if you shoot him, he will kill you. Simple as that.
So what did she think of the implementation then? Was she appreciative of it?
Oh, yeah, I think she liked it. And see, the thing with this level, what you want to do is stand to one side, out of Rory's range, and just shoot the the pellets, and they will fall down onto the ground.
Oh, I see. Oh, man.
Try not to walk into the wall. That doesn't really help.
Right, I know. I keep doing that. All right, I'm going to give this a shot now that I know what's going on. I think
you've died now.
That's awesome. Is that story in the game? Is that captured here? To understand that, because this is good. We got some director's cut stories on this recording. It's great.
I can't remember if we've told it if it's in the documentation there. It may be.
Yeah, there's some notes about where Rory came from.
Yeah, sure. I think so. Yeah.
Yes.
All right. Fair enough. Well, yeah, this is cool. Anything else about, I don't want to spoil the whole game. I think people should get it and explore it. And because that's what's so great about the, you know, what you did with Karateka and Atari 50 is that discovery aspect of it. So I don't just want to run through and spoil everything here. I think it's important for people to kind of discover that on their own. But is there anything that I should be pointing, that I should jump to that you think is worth highlighting for a discussion point on this?
We would need a lot of time to spoil the whole thing. I mean, there's lots in there. Yeah. And I think the important thing is that you get to go through it at your own pace. Mm-hmm. And you get to, it's like you get to dig into what you want to dig into. You know, it's like, do you want to look through the scans of Jeff's like school notebooks, or would you rather just sort of move on and play a game? It's like you have all the power to kind of do it exactly the way that you want to do it. Anything else? I mean, obviously there's so much in there. Oh, probably Attack of the Mutant Camels 89 for the Conix multi-system would be a great one to talk about.
This one? No.
Is this one? The one for the Conix multi-system. It was a British arcade or British console that was never released.
Yeah. You want to go to, like, you're sorting by year, so go down to 1989 or 1990.
I was actually working on this game at the same time as I was working on Llamatron. One was on like X86 code, one was 68,000 code. It was a pain in the ass.
It's the one that's represented by a green floppy disk.
Oh, got it. Okay.
There we go.
Let's do it.
And again, you know, I'm sure that we had the actual sketch that Steinar Lund did for what was going to be the cover art of this game. So what you're playing is a demo, you know, it's not finished. You have infinite lives and, you know, it's not keeping track of much. And every time you die, it just sort of restarts you in there again. But the Conix multi-system was going to be a console that was going to come out in Britain. And Jeff spent a great deal of money, put a lot of LlamaSoft's resources and time and money into making what was going to be this launch title for the Conix multi-system. The Conix multi-system did not ship. And in fact, nobody, I don't even know if anybody even has the hardware at this point, but there were these dedicated fans who were able to actually put together an emulator for the Conix multi-system without having the hardware, but they had the system specs and they had Jeff's source code for Attack of the Mutant Camels 89, and by kind of comparing those two things, they were able to write an emulator that then played the game, and again, we were able to license that technology, include it here, and so for the very first time, you know, officially, we are actually releasing not only, you know, this game, but you know, any Conix multi-system game at all. I would be very surprised if there's ever a commercial release of a Conix multi-system game again. But it's wonderful to really get be able to mess around with this.
Jeff, could we add a little bit of color to the thing, that that game in particular, I think you always say, is not exactly the game you wanted to make out, but they pushed you in certain directions.
No, you're talking about Defender 2000.
Ah, Defender, yeah.
I'm getting Defender vibes from this, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of like a mashup between Defender and Attack of the Mutant Camels, basically. You can change the weapons as well. There's a button which lets you change the different weapon styles. So it's unfinished. But you could see where I was going with it.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm getting like, it's like Defender meets Art-Type meets, Mentor. That's good. And it's gorgeous.
I mean, I think it's important for people to know, because even if you've heard of the Conix multi-system, it's like when you look at this, it's like, oh, wow, it was really going to be capable of some really nice, graphical, display for 1989 when it was going to come out.
Yeah, I think you had a chunky bitmap. It was like 256 colors, which at that time was luxury. You know, when we were all on the ST and Amiga with 16 colors and 32 colors, having such a big palette was excellent. So many shades of purple I could put in there.
And it could have, I mean, it had the, if it had come out, it might have actually done well. I mean, it really, because the console market in the UK was really blown wide open at that point, because Nintendo had not really taken a foothold as it had in Japan or the US. So there was really this opportunity for kind of almost anybody to come in with a console at that point. So who knows what the history would have been like had this company actually gotten this thing, you know.
Yeah, it would have been great as well. Yeah, because it would have been a Welsh console as well.
Yep.
Very cool. And we all know what Welsh is, right? We all know that's a language for sure. It's not a question. We would never ever not assume that Welsh isn't a language. Cool. Good stuff.
That was something where we had to, I tried not to bother Jeff too much, but I mean, sometimes I had to go back to him like, Jeff, we're doing the subtitles for this video. And at some point you say you were living in, I believe it was Quimkeith was the name of it. Or
Quimkeith.
Quimkeith. Yeah. Quimkeith.
Quimkeith.
And, yeah, and I'm just like, what are you saying? how would I even look this up? And, you know, he's like, oh, of course, and sends me the spelling of it, which I'm like, oh, my gosh. So that was fun.
But you have to remember in Welsh that W and Y are also vowels. So even though it doesn't look like it's got any vowels in, it has got two.
right.
makes perfect sense. Why not? Sure. There are no rules. Cool. Well, I'm gonna kill the gameplay here. I do want to spend just a brief bit of time here talking about AKR just for a moment. That was the last collaboration we did with LlamaSoft, and that has gotten a substantial upgrade on PS5. So that now has VR support. So I wonder if you guys want to speak to that real quick. AKR on PSVR2.
Yeah. Basically, I think everything we do moving forward, we want to have VR available as one of the ways of using it, really, because it's just nice to be able to remove the borders from a game, completely immerse yourself in it. Even if the game itself doesn't need VR in order to be played, obviously it doesn't. VR gives you certain advantages. In AKR, for example, there are enemies which will spawn or do things off to the side. In the conventional game, there are audio cues which let you know this is going on. But in VR, you can just glance over and see this stuff going on. And so it makes everything feel a lot more continuous. You're not looking through a window anymore. You're actually there observing a whole thing. And it gives it a slightly different feel and a slightly more coherent feel, I think, when you play it that way.
Plus, there is the immersion factor. The immersion that you get in VR is you can't beat it.
Yes, it makes it feel like more of a real event that you're observing. You're there and you're part of it. You're not looking at it through a window anymore. And even with fairly simple arcade games, I think that's quite a powerful feeling.
Totally. And honestly, like it goes beyond that. Like being on PS5 is, you know, you can actually use the trackpad as well as a means of controlling the cursor in AKR. And being able to play it in VR with the PS5 controller, using the trackpad, almost like you would a trackball, is actually, it's the best way to play it, because you get that maximum precision. To Jeff's point, you don't get blindsided because you can always look at a moment's notice. And yeah, it's like, it's easily the best way to play the game. It is completely immersive and is the, yeah, it is. What did you say, Jeff, I think you said your games are like video drugs or something. Was that the idea?
digital narcotics is the way I've described.
There you go, close enough. And in VR, that's as good as it's gonna get. Like you're not gonna that is like straight to the eyeballs delivery.
Oh, you should see some of the stuff I'm doing now.
Well, I have. The fun part is I have seen the stuff that you're doing now, and it is awesome. So there you go, another teaser. But you know, we've been going on for a little while, so I just want to wrap this up and go to the I shouldn't move ahead. Ivan, anything you want to talk about bringing AKR to VR?
Just one thing about AKR that will say to me is funny, because Everyone seems not to like it, but me, but I really like it. I like a lot the one button control. I found it to be so natural. It's like, whoa, this is. I tried the two buttons, but I still prefer the one button control. It's like, it feels so good to me.
That's why it's an option.
And I will say it's been a bit challenging to make Akari PSVR. Not for the game itself, but to make the PSVR to work. I mean, it took me quite a while to figure out how to make everything together.
Yeah, we had a few rounds there, but it was but the results are fantastic. So it's a really great work, guys.
Maximum frame rate. We have the maximum frame rate.
That's right. 120 FPS, right? On PS5, if you can support it. Yeah, it's awesome. So check that out. And if you have the PS4 version, you can you get a free upgrade. So jump on that. All right, fellas, we've come to the end, which means we jump to the last segment, which has nothing to do with anything we spoke about prior. We're just going to talk about the games we've been playing. Chris, why don't we start with you?
I'm playing Game Center CX for the Nintendo Switch. This retro game challenge came out on the DS back in the day in the US, and they've just taken that and the sequel and they've put it on the Switch, and it's so much fun. If you've never heard of this, it's a bunch of fake retro games that were developed by Indie Zero, so they're really good. And then the idea is, the host of Game Center CX challenges you to accomplish certain goals in those games. So it's this very kind of meta thing going on where it's like, oh, score 1,000 points in this shooter, beat this one track in this racer. Lots of fun. I mean, really just built on the core of the games being so good. And then also it's like you're playing as like two little Japanese kids in the 1980s. So it's full of nostalgia. There's fake instruction books and fake magazines, and you read the fake magazines and it's like, you'll play the game and then you get a magazine in the mail later after you're done with that game. And that magazine has a cheat code that lets you, have infinite lives in one of the games you played before. And then you go back to it and it's just brilliant. Like I'm enjoying revisiting it basically.
That is wild. I thought I was going to have an obscure choice, but wow, you completely
blew it out of the water. Sorry.
That is unbelievable. That sounds crazy. Very cool though. Sounds interesting. Jeff, what about you?
I've been spending most of my spare time recently playing around with my new light synth, actually. I haven't really had a lot of time for gaming, apart from obviously the game I'm working on. But I'm also in parallel developing this new light synth, and it's so complicated. I'm having to learn how to use it as well. Like evenings and weekends, I'll be quite often sat here with my headphones on, listening to music. I've got it all hooked up to like physical control. So I've got an illuminated pad of buttons over here that I use for the UI, and I've got bunch of knobs that I twiddle at, knobs and sliders to twiddle over here. And it's the first time I've ever had like proper physical synthesizer controls on a light synth of mine, and it's absolutely wonderful. I could just lose hours and hours and hours on that. So all my downtime basically is spent playing around with that these days.
Yeah, it's pretty cool stuff. I did get to see that firsthand as well. So I could see how you could get stuck in there for a while. Ivan, how about yourself?
So I have to say, first of all, I've been 1 week in a row, I've been playing Tempest 4000 on the VCS to fix the things that they want to be fixed.
And he's been moaning every step of the way.
Yeah, because when you put hands on stuff, it has already been done quite a while ago, and someone asks you something new, and you think, from your point of view, it should be a couple of modifications. From my point of view, it's like, oh my God, this is going to mess up with all the code, but a lot of code has been while I'm attached. But that game I was playing, I'm a bit strange about it. Actually, it's difficult for me to find games because sometimes I want just to relax. I'm so stressed that I want something to relax. So it has to be difficult, but not too difficult. So I was playing this game, which is a kind of point-and-click adventure game called Brock the Investigator, which is an old game that I found out on offer on PlayStation stuff. But I quite liked it because I like the graphic, I like the story, I like the challenge, and thankfully they give you some hints, so if you get completely stuck, you can always find a way to get out. But I have to say, even that, it was getting on border to what for me is too difficult game to play and not. So I tried some of your games, but after they pretty soon reached my level of swear words where I can't play the game anymore. You know which one. Oh, it's called the
yes,
one.
I do. Yes, I do.
I'm definitely going to want to play Lunar Lander because I really like Lunar Lander. I love the original Lunar Lander.
Oh, yeah?
I like that style of game, so I'll be definitely looking forward to playing that one.
Oh, excellent. Looking forward to hearing your thoughts. Yeah. That'll be great. Cool. Well, as for myself, I've been playing a game called Anomaly Agent on the Switch. And that is it's a game that came out on Steam last year and seems to have a decent fan base behind it, but I never heard of it. Came to Switch, browsing around things to play as a something to play alongside Final Fantasy Rebirth, which you can hear my thoughts about that in the next episode, which was recorded before this. So that's when I'll be talking about that one. But Anomaly Agent is pretty awesome. It's a side-scrolling beat-em-up with some clever writing and time travel narrative. But the beat-em-up and platform mechanics are all pretty tight and fun, and it seems to be just the right level of challenge. The style is very cool in this very chunky pixel art style. Really cool. Lots of personality. Having a blast. The story is compelling. Characters are fun. You have like these choices. One of the funniest things in the game is every so often when you're in dialogues, you'll have these standard choices, but sometimes you'll have these yellow choices, and depending on your answer, will give you like nice good guy or bad guy points, or like nice guy, bad guy points. And that's also used as another means of upgrade. So you get coins to be used for general upgrades. And then you have like, you can upgrade your health for every 5 nice guy points you have. And then if you have bad guy points, then you could turn that into more money. It's a funny little system, and the responses are so weird. And I tried to say all the nice stuff, and then every so often I'm like, well, that seems like the nice answer, but the guy had a bad reaction. It's like, oh, my perfect streak of being a nice guy has just ended. So it's but I do recommend it. It's a lot of fun. So check that out. It's on Steam. And
I will say that now that you mentioned games like this, probably I'm thinking the games that I most enjoyed playing in the last years. It's been the Uncharted series. It's the only games that I play them all, and I managed to finish them all. It's a rare case, but I really love that type of game. Love the story, love the characters. It's a very nice game.
Totally. Yeah, the quality stuff. So, yeah, that's it. We've come to the end. Chris, anywhere you want people to find you on or anything you want to plug?
Oh, So, I mean, I'm on Twitter. The handle is KobunHeat, KobunHeat. I'm on Blue Sky, also kohler.bluesky.social. I don't even know. I forget. But yeah, you know, you can find me there and, you know, probably tweeting things about Digital Eclipse games.
Great. Jeff, how about yourself?
I'm on Mastodon if anyone wants to find me there. I'm Llamasoft_ox at toot.wiles. So do pop over and say hello. We publish every morning. I publish a video of us going out and feeding digestive biscuits to the sheep. So if you fancy seeing the sheep and the llama, then do come and have a look, or just come and say hello. Always happy to see new people.
Very cool, Ivan.
Well, I'm the same Mastodon as Jeff. I always like Jazz Goat at Toot Whales, and I'm mostly doing commentary of various things. Sometimes I swear about things. Sometimes most of the time I complain about things, but I try to be nice.
He's always complaining about things.
Well, you also, it is worth saying that you have a YouTube channel as well, right? Like the YouTube channel that that posts some videos of the
Basically, I upload each daily sheep time video to YouTube. I've just searched Jeff Minter on YouTube, you find me there. So they go up there first, and then I link them on Mastodon and Facebook. So
very cool. We'll have all these links in the description as well.
If you just search for Morning Sheep Time, you'll probably find it, because I don't think anybody else is doing a daily sheep video.
Very cool. And the sheep are awesome. The llama's awesome. The donkey's awesome. I also got to feed them digestive biscuits. That was a good time. And one of the highlights of my 3+ week excursion throughout Europe. So thank you for your hospitality, guys. You can find me on Twitter at Jays of Doom. Say hello, say good things, bad things, whatever you want, really. Comment below in the video. I tend to read all the comments, good and bad. And not that I take everything to heart painfully, everything's fine. And that's it. Again, reminder, Llamasoft, the Jeff Minter story, it's out. AKR, PSVR, it's out. Lunar Lander, pre-order, wish list, etc. It will be out. And the Discord link and the reviews and all the other stuff that I said at the beginning. Do that stuff. Chris, Jeff, Ivan, thank you so much for your time and joining me. Hope you had a good time. And everybody else, we'll talk to you next time. Bye.
Cheers.
Bye. Cheers.